Now I'm giving you all a copy of a Us to Come for Rishi Kunjabihari Us to Come. This is written by Srila Rupa Goswami. What we'll do is, at the start, beginning of every class, we will sing this Us to Come together. Krishnavija Prabhu will sing line by line, repetitively, and then we will repeat the English together, in unison, after we have finished the Us to Come.
He was saying,
If we want to elevate ourselves to the highest perfection of life, as to become one of the associates of God, we can prepare ourselves like that. He says, now we are trying to go to the moon planet in 1966. Now, here in this life, if we cultivate ourselves for the same thought, the moon planet, that means the moon planet, we have to hear about the moon planet, we have to think about the moon planet, oh, I want to go to such and such place. Prabhupada says, unless you hear, you cannot abide. Just like, now he mentions an example which is quite interesting actually. The first time I heard this lecture of Srila Prabhupada was many years ago, and this particular quote struck me, because this is actually what happened with Srila Prabhupada. He says, just like our friend Mr. Cohen. Now, Mr. Cohen was, his name is Harvey Cohen. He was one of the young first followers of Srila Prabhupada who came forward to offer Srila Prabhupada some assistance to begin his mission in New York. So then Mr. Cohen, Harvey Cohen, he went to live in California. So Prabhupada said, just like Mr. Cohen, our friend, he has left for California. Now, so far as I am concerned, this is 1966, I have no idea of California. Now, he has told me that after reaching there, he will write about the description of that place. Now, suppose if reading that description of the place, I think of going there. And Prabhupada did. And I think of preparing myself. Oh, I think, by hearing about the place, I must go there. So just like this example that Prabhupada is giving of California, he says, in this way, we must hear about that Chintamani Dham. What kind of trees are there? And you are very much pleased that after some time you think, I must go there. So we have to hear. Unless we hear what sort of God he is, what sort of God's place it is, what mode of life is there, Prabhupada says, unless we hear these things, we cannot be attracted. We cannot be attracted. So here is the very first, most important point. If we're not attracted to going to be with Krishna, if we find this world absolutely absorbing all of our time, attention, focus, and interest, then we have to hear more. We have to hear about another place. So, Prabhupada continues. He says in another lecture, this means you must hear about God, you must chant about God, and then the spiritual life begins. So we request you all that you chant the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is chanting. And for hearing about Krishna, you can read our books. This is open to all. There is no secrecy. So our request is, we are requesting all over the world the same thing. Please chant this Hare Krishna mantra, and Prabhupada then says, and be cleansed in your consciousness to understand your spiritual identity. In 1976, Srila Prabhupada visited Melbourne, and he gave some wonderful lectures there. In fact, Melbourne stands on the record of one of the places that Srila Prabhupada was most recorded by video and by recording lectures and so forth. So Melbourne stands as a prominent place for Srila Prabhupada speaking, especially of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said in Melbourne, he said, this is the best education. To hear about God, to chant about God, to think about God, to worship God. In this way, there are 9 processes. But if you simply hear about God, then you will also become perfect. So then, the next question as I was preparing this lecture was that came to my mind, okay, so who am I supposed to hear from? Now, we all know these answers, of course, because we've been to many Bhagavatam classes and Bhagavad Gita classes, and we all know the answers philosophically. We can answer all these questions. They're kind of almost like silly questions because we already know the answers. But do we deeply know the answers? Do we deeply know the answers? Because who do we hear from? Now, if anyone here, of course, anyone little who doesn't happen to have access, but if anyone has a question, what do they tend to do nowadays? Google it, right? They Google it. And what do they come in touch with? They come in touch with some information, and they cut it and paste it, and they put it into their own lecture or their own presentation or whatever information they're trying to present, and they never think, is this information that I'm taking from some source just by a few presses of a button, is this information really true? And anyway, they don't have time to think like that because they're not asked to think like that. They're asked to collect this particular information, put it into a particular format, and send it on and get on with their lives. So therefore, the question arises in my mind, having the same pattern of lifestyle as everyone else, who am I supposed to hear from? Who am I supposed to hear from? Prabhupada said, the first business is hearing. If you want to know some science, you must hear from the authorized person. Similarly, our process is to hear from Krishna, the most authorized person. If we speculate about God, that will never be sufficient. Not even can we touch the precincts of this knowledge by speculating. If we want knowledge without any doubt, and complete, then we must hear from God Himself. This is very easy to understand. By hypothesis, by speculation, you cannot understand anything. It must be known scientifically. Now, Srila Prabhupada loved to use this word, scientifically, in terms of his Krishna consciousness presentation. And it was ironic because everybody is using the word scientific to refute anything spiritual. Everything spiritual has a sentimental basis, a basis of subjectivity. I feel, you believe, but I believe. Everything is relative in the religious area. But in the scientific area, everything is absolute, fixed. You cannot go against it or think any other way. This is the truth. Science is the truth. And religion is something for the opiate of the people. For people who are a little weak, a little sentimental, they can incorporate a little belief in God, but not too much. Not too much. Because it should not get in the way of your day-to-day life. Right? Everyone knows that. It shouldn't be that your religion is for, in Christian, it's for Sunday. In Israel, it's for Saturday. In Krishna consciousness, it's for a few hours in the morning. But it shouldn't get in the way of your day-to-day life, your family life, your career, your everything that you've got planned for yourself. None of that should be interrupted by your spiritual life. This is the mentality that the world is presenting. And this, unfortunately, is the mentality that sometimes we don't get beyond in our own spiritual understanding. And if that's the case, and I say for myself, so many times I find myself thinking like that, then I find at those times that I'm in the shallow water of spiritual life. And in the shallow water, it's not so enjoyable. So I tend to go back to the land. But Prabhupada says, it must be known scientifically, and this science can be understood if a person knows the science. So who can know God better than God himself? So from God, if we hear, there is no doubt. This is Srila Prabhupada's premise. This is what he is recommending to us. And now another question may arise, if you are thoughtful. So, okay, so God we can hear from. How do we hear from God? After all, people go to church. What are they waiting for? Are they waiting for some kind of a voice to come from God? Some kind of a something in your heart that's coming from God? How do we actually hear from God? Now this is interesting because this question took me to another question. To whom does God speak? Does he speak to us? Yes, he does speak to us. Do we hear him very accurately and clearly? No, we don't. But he speaks to us. Continuously he speaks to us. But we don't pick him up. We don't have the proper transmitter to actually capture the sounds that he's relaying to us. But who can pick him up? Who can hear what he is saying as clearly as I can hear what these children who are sitting in front of me are speaking? Who can pick up God in that way? And how can I come to the point that I can pick up what God is saying with the same clarity and the same fullness as I can a young child sitting right before me? How can I come to that position? First, to whom does God speak? So by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada tells us, who is not different from Krishna. So Rupa Goswami detected this. Now Lord Chaitanya is presenting himself at that time to the world at large as just a bhakta, a very great bhakta. A very devoted person who, when they chant Hare Krishna, sometimes they fall on the ground and roll around in the ecstasy of their chanting. But when anyone would say to him anything else other than that he was a devotee, and he felt himself an insignificant devotee, if anyone would speak otherwise, he would cover his ears. So to the common people, he was simply a devotee of God. But Rupa Goswami detected this. When Rupa Goswami first met Lord Chaitanya at Prayag, he offered his obeisances in this way. Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaurav Chay Namaha. He detected. He said, my Lord, you are Krishna himself. Now you have taken the form or the disguise of Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. You are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Your mission is to distribute Krishna prema, love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya's mission was to distribute love of God. How to love God? How to love God? How to love God? Another question. How to love God? So many people you meet will say, I love God. I believe in God. I love God. But when you talk to them a little bit, just like with an Ayurvedic doctor, when he puts his fingers on your pulse, you can say, I'm very healthy. I take lots of exercise. I eat very well, but he puts his finger on your pulse and he can tell everything. And everything you say, he just puts it aside. And then he says to you, you have a problem with your liver. Because he can tell everything from the pulse. So when we take the pulse of a religious person who says, I love God, I have love of God, we are always interested to see what is the quality of this love that he has. Because we have a standard of love of God. We have the standard of love of God that is so high and so perfect that it makes all of us feel, every one of us feel, in all honesty, I don't love God. I don't even have the first understanding of what it means to love God. And this is the beginning of loving God, is to come to that position of sunya, of feeling actually I'm empty. I don't have anything. And how do we get there? It's not we get there by hearing how bad we are. That's not the process in spiritual life of feeling very empty. The process in spiritual life is of looking at somebody who is very full. And by looking at them, we automatically feel our own emptiness. So Lord Chaitanya, when he would say, Krishna, 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 just hearing the name of Krishna, he would cry, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And when people would say to him, oh, you are such a great devotee, you're crying. He would say, what kind of a devotee am I? I'm just a fake devotee. I'm crying. It's just because I'm just feeling my own unhappiness, my own personal unhappiness. If I was actually loving Krishna, I could not even remain alive. So this is just an imitation. So here is what Lord Chaitanya is saying. Here is what Prabhupada is saying. And here are we. So then, how are we going to actually become genuine aspiring devotees? And the answer is the same as it was in the beginning. We have to hear about Krishna. We hear about Krishna from those who have realization of Krishna, and they pass down the same thing, and that's what a disciplic succession means. The same information has been passed down. And as we have faith in these personalities by hearing from them, then we develop our own inclination to love Krishna as well. So, on this point, I would like to introduce to you something of the spiritual world. Now, because it's very difficult to go from our thoughts and our patterns and everything that's going on around us here and now, and to hear about the spiritual world, it's not very easy. It's not very easy, I can assure you, because I've had to do a lot of preparation, and in that time, many times I thought, oh, I'll do this a little later when I'm in a different mood. Because the things of life are pressing and they're demanding and we're active and so on and so forth. And also when I sit down to hear about something completely transcendental, I think, I can't quite relate to this. This is not what I'm used to thinking about. So I'm sharing with you my difficulty so that if you, on hearing, feel some discomfort yourself, you don't feel any discouragement, but you continue to just hear, because that's what I did. Again, I would like to share with you first some more quotes from Srila Prabhupada. In the material world, which is where we are, if you haven't noticed, everything is but a reflection of the spiritual world. Now please take note of anything that you find interesting in relationship to any concepts about the spiritual world that will help you when we hear something more directly of the spiritual world. Everything here is a reflection of that world, and that reflection is perverted. We cannot understand the affairs of the spiritual world on the basis of our experience of the material world. Why? Everything we deal with here is present in the spiritual world, but here it has no real value. It is only a reflection. Now just think about that. A reflection. The difference between a reflection and an object. If I have an orange in one hand, and I have a mirror in the other hand, and if I could place them like this before you, and you could see the orange in the mirror, and you could see the orange, which orange, this one or this one, is going to have flavor? Which orange is going to taste something? Which of these two oranges are you even going to have a tangible experience of with your senses? This one or this one? So Prabhupada says, it is only a reflection. In the store windows we see many mannequins, but nobody cares very much for them. So for those who don't know, a mannequin is the beautiful ladies who stand in the shop window and wear the new fashionable clothes that you're supposed to buy. The lady may be very beautiful, but we don't stand before her and say, oh, she's so beautiful. I wish I could have some conversation with her. Everybody knows that they are false. A mannequin may be very, very beautiful, but still, it is false. When people see a beautiful woman, however, a beautiful woman they're attracted to, because she is real. But in actuality, the so-called living are also dead, because this body is simply a lump of matter. As soon as the soul leaves the body, no one would care to see the so-called beauty of the woman. So you think about that for a minute. If you had the most beautiful woman in the world, maybe you'd come into a museum if she was all mummified with oils and chemicals and you'd have a little peep, but you wouldn't stay there very long, because there's a dead, lifeless body, even a beautiful, dead, lifeless body. The real factor, the real attracting force, is the spirit soul. In material world, everything here is made of dead matter. Therefore, it is simply an imitation. The reality of things exists in the spiritual world. Now, Prabhupada gives us this example. Just like you see my face, you see your face in the mirror. But it is not actually your face. It is simply, the mirror is here, I'm standing here, I'm looking, I'm seeing, oh, there's my face in the mirror. Is it my face in the mirror? Is it actually my face in the mirror? No, the mirror is here, my face is here. But I'm saying, I'm seeing my face in the mirror. So he said, it is simply, the face is here, and the shadow is there in the mirror. Or, to give another example, to help us, Srila Prabhupada said, just like I speak in the tape recorder, and when you play, you replay the tape recorder, the same voice will come. But that is not myself. That is my separated energy. With my energy, I have spoken something. I have vibrated some sound, and that is recorded in the tape. When it is played back, it produces exactly the same sound, but still, it is separated from me. You can have the sound, but you can't have the person. Please try to understand. This material world is like this, separate. Real life is in the spiritual world. Now, because I'm a little worried, how's our time, by the way? What time is it? What time is breakfast?
Nine,
okay. So what I'll do is I'll come back to some more conceptual work. But what I would like to do is introduce you to the spiritual world through Srila Rupa Goswami's writing. Now, this is a book called Radha Krishna Gonadesh Dipika. The deep, everyone knows. So this is a lamp. Srila Rupa Goswami has given this literature. It is called A Lamp to See the Associates of Radha and Krishna. Now, when you hear about these are all just like little hints. You won't be getting like a wonderful, complete picture. It's just like a thumbnail. This is all you're going to get now, because that's all we can have now. That's all we're capable of. And even the thumbnail is a little difficult sometimes for us. But here, Rupa Goswami is going to share something. He begins his book by saying, the celebrated personal associates of the King and Queen of Vrindavan are briefly but truthfully described with great delight in both the Vedic traditions and oral traditions. This book will also describe them. These associates of the Lord are described by the residents of Mathura Mandala, by the various books written by devotees, by the various Vedic literatures such as the Puranas and the Agamas, but also by great devotees and saintly people. For the satisfaction of my dear friends, these associates of the Lord will now be briefly described in writing. following the previous authority in the path of ecstatic love of God. Now he begins his book. The associates of Krishna who reside in Brajabhumi may be divided into three groups. So he's going to present this to us in a very, I guess this is good for us, isn't it? We're very statistically minded. But we don't, you know, we don't carry that statistic mindedness over to the spiritual. The spiritual is a bit vague and ethereal. But here we're very statistic, like this group, and they're there, and they sit over there, and so on. So Srila Rupa Goswami, in his wisdom, is presenting in this way. Although at the end of the book, he says, actually, none of these numbers really... This is just to help you a bit. So he says, the followers, the associates of Krishna who live in Brajabhumi are divided into three groups. One, the protectors of domestic animals. Two, the brahmanas. And three, all the others. So then he describes those groups, what they're like, where they live, a little bit. Just one or two verses on each. And then after describing that, he comes to the point of describing now the family or the associates of Krishna himself in Braja. Because in Brajabhumi there's like, it's just like if you say, in Melbourne, there are such and such, so many different kinds of ethnic groups. And then he'd say, in the family of this particular person, there are this kind of people. So now Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna's associates may be divided into the following eight groups. There's eight groups of Krishna's associates. His worshipable superiors, which means his family and others. That's the first group. The second, his relatives who are on the same level, such as his brothers and sisters and so forth. Third group, gopi messengers. Fourth group, his servants. Fifth group, the craftsmen. Sixth group, his maidservants. Seventh group, the contemporary cowherd boys. And the eighth group, his very most dear gopi friends. Included amongst the worshipable superiors are the brothers and similar relatives of Nanda Maharaj. Nanda's contemporary friends, servants and other associates and the elderly gopis. Krishna is always respectful to all these superiors. Now, when I was on the plane coming over and I read this list of people, eight groups of people in Krishna's close associates, I noticed that there was nobody on the list like boss, the government, corporate, business sectors, the industrialists of Braj, the educationalists, there's no educationalists there, there's no social workers there, there's no IT there, there's nothing. And so then we think, there's nothing I'm interested in there. My goodness. So then we should, when we capture ourselves thinking this way, mostly we're unconscious, we don't even know what we're thinking, but when we catch ourselves thinking something, then we can turn that opportunity into an opportunity to grow materially and spiritually, and especially spiritually. So when you think like that, there's no group there that really interests me. I'm interested in something. I'm interested in football. There's no football there. Then we have to stop and think again. Oh yes, wait, this is a perverted reflection of that. So there must be something more attractive than whatever it is that I'm interested in there. And but it must be a little different from here. So let me try again. Okay, let us hear now an example of one of Krishna's relatives. Because here we have relatives. We have family. And we're very fond of our family. Or we're very annoyed at our family. Sometimes our family are frustrating. Well, interestingly enough, transcendentally, all of these elements are there within Krishna's pastimes also. But they all are completely different than here. This is Krishna's grandfather. He's one of the worshipful superiors. Sri Krishna's fair-complexioned, white-haired, and white-attired grandfather is called Parjanya Maharaj because he is like a great cloud. A cloud, the word is Parjanya. He showers the nectar of auspiciousness, and he is the best of all the residents of Braja. Desiring a worthy descendant, he followed the advice of Deva Rishi Narada and engaged in the worship of Lord Narayan, the husband of Lakshmi. As he was worshipping Narayan in Nandeshwarpur, a pleasant voice spoke the following words from the sky. Because of your pious austerities, you will attain 5 sons. Of these sons, the middle one, named Nanda, will be the best. And Nanda's glorious son will delight the residents of Braja. He will defeat all opposition. Both the demigods and the demons will worship him, touching the jewels of their crowns to his lotus feet. Hearing this, Parjanya Maharaj became very, very happy, and he decided to reside in that place, that is Nandeshwar Hill. He lived there until he saw the Kesi demon arrive, and at that time he became frightened and he fled with all his associates to Mahavan. Now here's a bit of gossip, right? Really? Oh, yes, really? That's amazing. So we have to learn to have that same tendency to want to hear, to want to share, to want to talk about Krishna, and to do that we have to know him. Krishna's father is Nanda Maharaj. Nanda delights the residents of Braja, and he is worshipped by all the world. He has a little bit of a large belly. His complexion is the color of sandalwood, and he is tall in stature, and his garments are the color of Bandujiva flower. Does anyone know of a Bandujiva flower? So we don't know what color a Bandujiva flower is. His beard is a mixture of black and white hairs, like rice and toasted sesame seeds mixed together. Nanda is the king of the cowherd men, the younger brother of Upananda, and the intimate friend of Maharaj Vasudev. Nanda and his wife Yasoda are the king and queen of Brajabhumi and the parents of Lord Krishna. Because he possesses the splendor, Deva, of great wealth, Vasu, Nanda Maharaj is also sometimes known as Vasudev. And he is also famous by the name Anaka Dandubi. And it is known that in his previous birth, he was named Drona. So then, the Radha Krishna Gonadesh Deepika, it continues to give little snapshots of the family members of Krishna's family, and also the family of Yasoda, her brothers and sisters, and what their names are, where, what village they come from, and so forth. It describes the details of Krishna's dress, what he wears, what his different flower ornaments are called. He has a comb, it has a name. He has a pet dog, he has a name. He has a pet deer, he has a name. Radha has a pet deer. Krishna has a pet peacock. Radha has a pet peacock. All of these various details of Krishna's paraphernalia and family and friends and so forth are all given for us. Then, in this book, Sri Rupa Goswami starts to describe something about the gopis. He describes the 8 main gopis, who are one of those 8 classes. He describes the maid servants, that were one of those 8 classes of Krishna's companions. He describes Krishna's friends, and he describes one category of gopi servants known as Gopi messengers. Now please hear what the messengers, the Gopi messengers, what they do. So one of the Gopi messengers is Vishakha. We've all heard of Vishakha. We see her on the altar in Vrindavan Dham and many other places. So here is something about Vishakha. Vishakha, the intimate friend of the divine couple, is more exalted than the younger gopis, but she also takes up the work of carrying messages between Radha and Krishna. And she is the most intelligent and expert of all the gopi messengers. So what does she do? Loquacious Vishakha is expert at joking with Govinda. She is the perfect counselor. She's a counselor, there you go. She's the perfect counselor for the divine couple. She is expert at all the arts of amorous diplomacy. She knows all the arts of how to conciliate an angered lover and how to bribe him and how to quarrel with him. So all of this goes on here in this world, but all of this is all for the pleasure of Krishna only. Only Krishna. There is only one central point in the spiritual world. And this is the reason why it's difficult for us, because we have ourselves, as Prabhuji was saying yesterday, as the central point. And for me, there's me, I, and there's mine. And it's very difficult to shift from this I and this mind conception. It's not real. It's an illusion. It doesn't become real because we believe it. It's a conception. But we hold it very firmly. And with this conception, we can't understand Krishna. Hardly we have an interest in understanding Krishna, because it becomes a competitive subject matter to I and mine. So what do we do? Prabhupada has told us, hear, hear, keep hearing. It will have an effect. The gopi messengers appointed by Vrindadevi have all the flowering trees of Vrindavan. All the flowering trees of Vrindavan under their jurisdiction. And not only do they have all the trees under their jurisdiction, they have all the parrots under their jurisdiction. And the parrots fly, of course, from tree to tree. And they also carry messages between Krishna and Radha and the other gopis. Please hear about another one of these messengers, Champaka Lata Devi. She is the third of the gopi messengers. Champaka Lata veils her activity in great secrecy. She is expert at the art of logical persuasion. She is a skilled diplomat. She's got all these good qualities. And she knows how to thwart Srimati Radharani's rival. Champaka Lata is expert at collecting fruit, flowers, and roots from the forest. Using only the skill of her hands, she can artistically fashion things from clay. Champaka Lata is also an expert cook, and she knows all the literature describing the six flavors of gourmet cooking. She is so expert at making various kinds of sweets that she has become famous by the name Mr. Hasta, or Sweet Hand. So this is just a little description of a kind of a cameo shot of Krishna's associates. And here we have also, and I will save this in case we have time at the end, a description of Krishna himself given by Sri Rupa Goswami. He says at the end of his book, "The numbers presented in this description have no actual relevance to the number of eternally liberated souls in the spiritual world. There the associates of the king and queen of Vrindavan are unlimited in number. No one can count them. We have simply given some hints so the reader may understand the vast number of associates of the divine couple. Preparing the divine couple's couch, food, drink, and betel nuts. Swinging them on a swing or decorating them with tilak are amongst the many services performed by the gopis. The learned devotees who may research this and enumerate on these services. Srila Rupa Goswami prays that the effulgent Krishna sun may remove the blindness from his eyes and enable him to properly see and understand the various Rasa Shastras that describe Radha and Krishna and their associates. In the year 1472, on Sunday, the sixth day of the month of Shravan, in Nandagram, the home of the King of Braj, this book, Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika, was completed. So, back to us. A moment in the spiritual world, back to us. So the Prabhupada gives another interesting point that I think to me is really important, because when thinking about spiritual subject matters, we have a tendency to hold back. And one of the reasons we hold back is because we're deriving some sort of pleasure from our present position of being in the center with all of my surrounding friends, family, and paraphernalia. And so when you're asking me to hear about somebody else being in the center, I'm holding back. And the reason I'm holding back is because I prefer the pleasure that I'm experiencing here. Srila Prabhupada says everyone is trying to find out about pleasure. That is our only business. Think. That is our only business. Behind whatever we're doing, if you study carefully, you'll see that there's a need or a drive to pleasure. We may not be satisfying or gratifying that desire for pleasure very wisely, or we may feel ourselves burdened to do so many things in order to get that pleasure. So we may feel some stress or some difficulty. But if you trace back in your own inner thinking, you'll see that what you need, your need is, I need pleasure. And I need this pleasure. It's essential to my whole life, to my whole being. And therefore, this, that, this. Therefore, so many things. But the basis is, I need this pleasure. Why are you working so hard, day and night? Because you know, at night, I shall mix with this girl. Or, I shall mix with my wife. And I shall enjoy. The whole, everyone is accepting all kinds of trouble to find out that pleasure. So pleasure is the ultimate goal. But you, that's me, that's you, that's us, we do not know where is that pleasure. That is the illusion. Real pleasure is in the transcendental form of Krishna. You will find that Krishna is always jolly. Confirmed. There are so many pictures you see. So many pictures, and Krishna never looks stressed. And he never looks angry. And he never looks like his life is giving him a lot of trouble and pain. He always looks happy. And if we join him, you become jolly. That's all. Have you seen any picture where Krishna is working on a machine? On a computer? Have you seen Krishna with any huge machinery in any industry? Have you seen a picture of Krishna? Or, says Prabhupada, have you seen a picture of Krishna and he's smoking? No. By nature, pleasure, you see, by nature Krishna is happy. So Prabhupada tells us, you have to unfold yourself. Unfold yourself in this way, and you will find pleasure. Simply full of pleasure. That is all. Now, we may not be feeling that even in our Krishna consciousness. Is there any of us who are feeling full of pleasure, that's all? Maybe there's a few divine beings here, but most of us are quite struggling. So what is the essence of that struggle? This is another question that arises. When we go to the essence, that means you're going to like the heart of the problem. And then that goes up, 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 and it branches out like the essence of a tree is its roots. And then it goes up and it branches this way and that way, and we all have our different problems. And most of the time, we're busy talking about this up here. This, I've got this problem, and that person has that problem, or I don't have this, or they have that, and so on. And we think this is really the most substantial part. But this is actually not the most substantial part. The substantial part is to go to the essence, because if you can remove the essence, if you can change the conception at the base, then all of this can be altered. If you don't change this, you'll just move from one branch to another, to another, to another, change this, alter this, have one of these, that didn't work, now this, another job, another place, another country, another time. But nothing will really change unless you come to the essence. What is the misconception that I'm holding that is causing all these branches to quiver? Prabhupada tells us, in the spiritual world, there is no disagreement. Have you noticed there's disagreement in this world? Have you noticed? There is no disagreement in the spiritual world. That God is great and we are small. There is no disagreement. There is no disagreement with this concept in the spiritual world. God is great and we are very small. But the material world means God is great and we are small. There is disagreement. We don't like it. This is the material world. Try to understand the distinction between the material world and the material mind and the spiritual world. The living entity, that is ourselves, are very minute particles of God. But in the spiritual world, everyone is aware of their position. Every living entity, they know, what is my position? I am a small particle of God. Therefore, there is no disagreement. They understand, I am this, he is this, and I am this. They understand and accept that there. In the material world, in the spiritual world, there is no disagreement, so everything is going on nicely. But here in this material world, he is actually the small particle of God, but there is disagreement. He is falsely thinking that I am as good as God. This is material life. And liberation means that we are free from this wrong conception. This is liberation. Be free from this wrong conception. Now how am I thinking I'm as good as God? I know I've got so many problems. I know things don't go my way all the time. How am I thinking I'm as good as God? You are, because you're thinking, I want to enjoy myself. I want something for myself. This is my family. This is my money. This is my time. This is my life. I want to do with it what I want to do with it. But only God has that freedom. And all the living entities who are in pure consciousness, undiseased in the spiritual world, they're all orbiting around him. And they're all full of pleasure. He's full of pleasure. They're full of pleasure. And here we're struggling so hard trying to find pleasure on the basis of a misconception. And therefore Prabhupada tells you, if you listen to him in his lectures, which are so powerful, he'll tell you over and over and over and over again without fail, you will never find happiness here. You will come to the wrong place. You cannot be happy here. And what do? We're stubborn. We say, I'm not happy. It's because of my circumstances. Let me change them. I'm not happy. I don't have enough money. Let me make more money. I'm not happy. I don't have a good job. Let me get a better job. I'm not happy for this. Let me have that. I don't like one child. I want two children. I don't want two children. I want one child. On and on and on and on and on. I'm not happy. But we never come to the point of understanding the essence of why I'm not happy will never go away. And to give you a good example that you can all relate to, think of a fish. When you take him out of the water, you can give him everything you want to give him, but he'll never be able to breathe. He belongs in the water. He can't be happy in the air. He needs the water. So this is how it is for us also. But we have grown accustomed to call all of this misery happiness. We say, oh, something went well for me today. It was a good day. And we call that our relief from a bit of misery is happiness. But Prabhupada says, no, 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 no. You're meant for so much more than that. You're being so foolish because you're actually meant to be as happy, as good as God, almost on the same level with Him. Now, this is a closing statement to what I wanted to share with you here. If we have any time left, I would like to read to you. If not, I have other things with me. If anyone is interested in going deeper into the subject matter, I'm happy to share with them some of the things that I found from Srila Prabhupada's lectures whilst preparing this class. Srila Prabhupada says, one should simply try to understand that on the spiritual platform, there are many varieties of reciprocal love. Such loving exchanges should never be considered to be material. In the Mahabharata, Udyama Parva, it is warned that things which are inconceivable should not become subject to argument. This is logical, isn't it? If you can't conceive of it, what's the use of arguing about it? Think for a bit. It's very logical. If I can't understand what it is, how can I argue about it? And yet people do. They're so foolish. The Prabhupada continues. Actually, the transactions of the spiritual world are inconceivable to us in our present state of life. But great liberated souls like Srila Rupa Goswami and others have tried to give us some hints of the transcendental activities in the spiritual world. But, on the whole, these transactions will remain inconceivable to us at the present moment. Understanding the exchanges of transcendental loving service with Krishna is only possible when one is actually in touch with the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. When I read that, I thought, what does that mean? It's possible when one is in touch with the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. In this connection, Srila Rupa Goswami gives an example of the clouds in the sky. The clouds in the sky rise up, they come up from the ocean. And when the clouds become full of water, then that water falls all the way back down to the ground. And they glide, and that water glides back down to the ocean. Thus the pleasure-giving potency of Krishna is compared to the ocean. The pure devotee is the pleasure-possessing cloud. He possesses this pleasure potency of Krishna. In other words, simply put for us, we have to experience the pleasure that Krishna feels. Somehow we have to experience that, or else we won't be able to understand anything. So So that sounds very esoteric, doesn't it? We have to experience it. And yet, I remember, I don't know how many people are here, I see many familiar faces, but during the Japa retreat, after the devotees had chanted 64 rounds, the kirtan that took place in here was full of pleasure. And it was so much full of pleasure, and it wasn't the ordinary kind of pleasure, right? It wasn't. And as my husband said at the end, he said, when you go out, you can pick up your mind, they're all waiting outside. And it was like that. All of a sudden, we were all doing things that we wouldn't normally do, jumping and dancing, when normally perhaps we'd be very sober thinking about so many things, because we came in touch with that pleasure-giving potency. And then, when that we have that touch, then when we hear about Krishna, somehow or another, it becomes so much easier to appreciate and one day to understand. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada would always chant before a lecture. It was not an intellectual process that Prabhupada was speaking. It was an emotional experience that he wanted to share with us. So first of all, we would chant so that we would be prepared. Sometimes I see, this is just a note, an observation, that people come, they miss the kirtan before a Bhagavatam class. They think, oh, that's a good time to get such and such done. And I come just for the class, I don't come for the kirtan. But you should understand that in sadhana bhakti, everything is scientific. Even if it's not done properly, because we're very new to the process is scientific, it's there for a reason. And so when we cut the tail and the end off, snip it off, because it doesn't really do anything for us, then we must understand that we're actually not following the process as it's supposed to be followed to get that particular result. So Prabhupada continues this example. The pleasure potency is Krishna himself. He's the ocean. The pure devotee is the pleasure-giving cloud. He receives from the ocean. He goes up into the sky. And when he is filled with transcendental loving service, then he can bestow his mercy as a downpour of rain. And the pleasure potency returns to the ocean of Krishna. So everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna. We're Krishna. The material energy is Krishna's energy. Everything is coming from Krishna, and everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. When we accept that I am an infinitesimal part of Krishna, and my love should be given to Krishna, and nothing of this world will please me, only Krishna loves me, then we can start to reciprocate with Krishna and real pleasure arises. So, I will stop here. If anyone has any questions or any points, they can please raise them. I think we're close to our time. But please, if there's anything. Did you have your hand up? Mm-hmm. Yes.
If the tape recorder and the person that speaks it are different, and how is it that the name and the form of Krishna is the same?
The tape recorder and the person was an example given. Let me find it again. That was an example, Gandiva, that was given to explain how the world is separate than Krishna. It's Krishna's energy, but it's separate from him. So the example in that sense is that I'm sitting here, I'm speaking. And then you record it on a tape recorder. You can listen to that at a distance. But I, the person who is speaking, and the recording of my voice, they're the same, but at the same time they're different. So it's not a question of Krishna's name is different than him. It's a question that the material world is different than him. The material energy is different than him. You want to continue asking?
So is it different because it's like is the instruction of the guru and the guru, the instruction is on the tape recorder. And then so he's saying that he's Prabhupada was saying in that instance that he is separate from the tape recording.
Yes.
But then we're seeing that his instructions on the tape recording.
So this example is helpful in understanding, you know, how Srila Prabhupada explains the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. It's known as Achinta Veda Abheda Tattva. Tattva means, you could say, like philosophy. And Achintya means inconceivable. That's why Prabhupada said, if something's inconceivable, why argue about it? You don't understand it, you can't understand it. But generally, philosophies form into two, religious philosophies form into two different sectors. One is that everything is one, which takes the Buddhist philosophy, the impersonal philosophy and everything. We're all one. And when we discard our sort of false understanding of ourselves now as individuals, we'll understand that we're all one. And the other philosophy is more or less that God is somewhere, he's like out there somewhere. And we're quite separate from him. We're having our life, we're going on with our life, and we're very different than him. We may or may not choose to call for his help. Some people do if they're a little weak and disabled, but most people can get on without him. We're different than him. Do you follow? Two different ways of thinking. We're different than God. We don't really have to have anything to do with him if we don't want to. He's just somewhere. Some people think he's even dead. Prabhupada would talk about that. He'd say, because you're dead, you think that he's dead. So we think he's different, we're different. But Prabhupada is explaining how Lord Chaitanya synthesized these two philosophies and said that we and everything is simultaneously not different from Krishna and different from Krishna at the same time. And that's inconceivable. We can't conceive of it. If you can't argue and you can't conceive, that means I can't explain it to you. So therefore we need an example. So from that example, we can understand it a little bit. So here's a good example that Prabhupada is trying to give us. He was always in his arguments trying to find some analogy, something in this world that would help us to understand something that's actually very vast or very subtle. So here he's saying, yes, the spiritual master's instructions on the tape recorder aren't the same as the spiritual master in person who's sitting before you, who's speaking them. There's a person there, and his words are coming from his mouth. But they're captured in the tape recording, and there you have them. And yet, when we listen to them from the spiritual perspective, they are the same. Because for many long years we've been listening to Srila Prabhupada, and he's not physically present before us. Or the deity of Srila Prabhupada. He's not physically present in the deity, yet he is physically present, yet he isn't. Simultaneously, both of these are true. So this is how Srila Prabhupada is using this example. He vibrated the sound. With my energy, I have spoken something. I have vibrated some sound. That is recorded in the tape. When it is played back, it produces exactly the same sound, but still, it is separated from me. Try to understand. The material world is like that. The real life, the person, in that example, or the orange and the mirror, the real life is in the spiritual world. This is our great challenge in this life as devotees, to come to this change of conception. This was something I realized some years ago, I was reflecting on, that really the problem lies in our misconceptions, and Prabhupada used that word a lot, misconception, they have a misconception, because it's what I think things are, therefore I act. Because I think you're a friend of mine, therefore I give you a gift. If somebody came and said, you know, she's been doing all these things behind your back, or do you know, she's having an affair with your husband. My goodness, I don't think you're my friend anymore. So I change my activities immediately towards you. All my activities change because my conception has changed. And how did it change? Because somebody gave me some information that gave me a new concept, a paradigm shift. And this is what, as devotees, we should be always begging for. I wish to change my paradigm. So I can grow, keep moving in spiritual life. And not just be kind of stuck somewhere. I want to keep growing and going forward. Keshava has appeared. That means it's the end of the class.
10 more minutes.
10 more minutes. Any other questions? And even any more? Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other points? Yes.
In the class, you mentioned that Nanda Maharaj was in the middle of the five brothers.
Yes.
Yet he is referred to as King of
Vrindavan. Yes.
Also, traditionally, the eldest son becomes the king.
Yes.
Did you mention how that happened?
Yes. Everybody decided that Nanda Maharaj was the best. He's so nice. He's the personification of fatherly love. He was so lovely that all of his older brothers said, "You become king. We will serve in your council." And so Upananda, the oldest brother, he became the prime minister. And then each of the brothers, they all take their part and they all serve Nanda Maharaj. Because just as everyone circles around Krishna in the spiritual realm, they also circle around each other in a loving way. Here, as I was saying, everyone is their own center. You know, you throw, Prabhupada used the example, you throw a whole bunch of rocks into a lake, and what happens? They all start circling together and it creates all kinds of ripples and everything becomes turbulent. But as you say, if you throw them in your hand all in the same place, boom, it makes a big ripple. And it's very, there's no disagreement, it's compatible. So everyone is serving each other there. Yes, you're correct, there is Vedic tradition there, so everybody has to agree to serve each other. But it's transcendental to that. What do you think, Abhishek? Would you like to go there? Yes. Would you like me to read you about Krishna? Krishna's form glistens with the black mascara of sweetness, of his transcendental handsomeness. His complexion is the color, where's our, oh, we haven't got our harmonium player here. He's disappeared. Ah, here he comes. Come on. I had collected another wonderful work of Rupa Goswami to share just a small amount of with you. But when I was preparing the class, I realized that I was grossly overprepared. So you'll have to forgive me. Maybe we can read some more in Melbourne at the temple for the pleasure of Radha Balava. Okay, ready? Sri Krishna's form glistens with the black mascara of the sweetness of his nectarine handsomeness. His complexion is the color of blue lotus flowers or a sapphire. His complexion is as enchanting as an emerald, a tamal tree, or a group of beautiful dark clouds. He is an ocean of nectarine handsomeness. He wears yellow garments and a garland of forest flowers. He is decorated with various jewels. And he is a great reservoir of the nectar of many transcendental pastimes. He has long curly hair and he is anointed with many fragrant scents. His handsome crown is decorated with many flowers. His handsome forehead is splendidly decorated with tilak markings and curly locks of hair. And the playful movement of his raised eyebrows enchants the heart of the gopis. His rolling eyes are as splendid as red and blue lotus flowers. And the tip of his nose is as handsome as the beak of Garuda, the king of birds. with charming ears and cheeks are decorated with earrings made of many jewels. His handsome lotus face is as splendid as millions of moons. He speaks many charming jokes, and his chin is exquisitely handsome. His handsome, smooth, and charming neck bends in three places. Decorated with a necklace of pearls and with Kustava gems, it shines like lightning. Krishna's handsome chest longs to enjoy the company of the beautiful gopis. Decorated with bracelets and armlets, Krishna's arms hang down to his knees. His reddish lotus hands are decorated with various auspicious signs, such beautiful decorations as the sign of a club, or a conch, barley corn, parasol, half moon, the rod for controlling elephants, a flag, lotus flower, plow, pitcher, and fish. Krishna's charming abdomen is the pastime abode of handsomeness. His nectarine back seems to long for the playful touch of the beautiful gopi. The nectarine lotus flower that is Lord Krishna's hips bewilders even the demigod Cupid, and Krishna's thighs are like two beautiful plantain trees that charm the hearts of all women. Krishna's knees are very splendid, charming and handsome, and his lotus feet are decorated with jeweled ankle bells. Krishna's feet have the luster of roses, and they are decorated with various auspicious markings, such as the markings of the disc, the half moon, the octagon, triangle, barley corn, the sky, parasol, water pot, conch shell, cow's footprint, swastika, rod for controlling elephants, lotus flowers, bow, and jumbo fruit. Krishna's handsome lotus feet are like two oceans filled with the happiness of pure love. His reddish toes are decorated with a row of full moons that are his toenails. Although we have sometimes compared Krishna's handsomeness to various things, nothing can actually be equal to it. In this place, we have given a small indication of Krishna's handsomeness, just to arouse the attraction of the reader. So here is Srila Rupa Goswami, the cloud that carries the water of Krishna's pleasure-giving potency up into the air and pours down the rain upon us. And this rain can put out, extinguish the forest fire that is burning in our hearts and in our minds in the absence of Krishna, whom none of us can live without, and whom everybody actually loves. Thank you very much.
Keshava, you have some message for us?